This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Today was the West Central Illinois Agronomy Day at Lincoln Land Community College. Presentations covered a wide array of topics to help farmers tackle a variety of issues in the coming years. Clinical Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois, John Newton, spoke on grain pricing fundamentals, saying he's optimistic about the price of corn and soybeans, but that doesn't mean we will be seeing high prices for these crops.
What we talked about today was just fundamentals supporting higher grain prices, but unfortunately, like you said, I'm the bearer of bad news today. You know, coming out of the record price years we had in 10, 11, and 12, farmers across the U.S. responded by planting more acres and improving yields, such that in 2013 and 14, we had two back-to-back really big crop years. And what that's done is that's increased our supplies while our consumption patterns really haven't changed significantly. So while corn consumption remains at a very high level, it has plateaued. And while we're producing ethanol with the equivalent of about 5 billion bushels of corn per year, the back-to-back big crops has pushed supply to a point where prices naturally have to come down. Same thing on the soybean side. We had a record production of soybeans last year. Even though consumption has improved in both soybean exports and crush, it's still to the point where we're increasing our supply this marketing year. So the question is, how much do we plant next year? Is there anything to really change consumption patterns to a higher level next year? And the answer is probably no. So absent a supply shock, likely outcome is prices decrease again next year because we have such a large carryout.
Newton says he's drawing confidence from consumption factors he sees remaining constant, which is allowing him to look to possible variations in supply for potentially higher prices.
So corn consumption, we have the renewable fuel standard. We're going to pull 5 billion bushels of corn off the balance sheet every year, despite any types of shocks to supply. On the soybean side, Chinese are importing the equivalent of 60 million acres of soybeans every single year. We are going to continue to be a soybean supplier to them and the rest of the world. So our soybean exports remains a firm consumption level that's going to always come off the balance sheet. So the place to find optimism for next year and going forward is any types of supply shocks. So whether it's 2 to 3 inches of rain in the Corn Belt or 2 to 3 degrees warmer in the Corn Belt, that can drive yield below expectations such that we have a shorter crop than we anticipate and we reduce our stock levels. And then that's when you would expect to see prices recover to a much higher level than what we have today.
But the hard truth all farmers are facing is that we're entering a time period of relatively low grain prices. Newton says three different groups have predicted grain prices out to 2019 with very similar results.
Those are price estimates from USDA, the Congressional Budget Office, and then the University of Missouri's FAPRI department. And they have corn, you know, out to 2019 in the $3.50 to $3.90 range. Again, that's below $4 a bushel. And on the soybean side, it's anywhere between $8 and $10 per bushel soybeans through 2019. But again, any type of supply shocks can push those prices higher.
Again, that was Clinical Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois, John Newton. Stay tuned for more from the Agronomy Day coming up after this. The fields are still frozen and snow-covered, but farmers and researchers are already worrying about this growing season's weed environment. University of Illinois Weed Science Research Specialist Douglas Maxwell addressed the weed concerns for 2015.
Well, we're looking at several challenges, especially in this part of the state. They've seen resistance problems with water hemp, mare's tail, and maybe Palmer pigweed starting to come into the area. So we're going to touch on those most heavily and talk about multiple resistant modes. We're going to look at the history of resistance and how they've developed over the last 30 years and where we see that trend continuing. And we're going to specifically go over three or four of these troublesome weeds and kind of the most effective ways to manage those versus just treat them after they come up.
Is there a certain main weed that farmers in this area should really keep an eye on that could be getting worse and worse with every year that they might see getting worse this year?
Throughout this region, I'm sure they're very familiar with water hemp, and the problem with it is it's going to have multiple modes of action of resistance. In other words, 2, 3, 4 different herbicides will be resistant to in a single plant. That's our biggest problem. But the big thing we've been talking about in the last year is the Palmer pigweed, a very aggressive cousin that's more competitive than water hemp, but it's a very similar species as water hemp. So Palmer pigweed, we've been tracking that throughout the state. It grows very quickly. It can rob you of your profits very quickly. So that's another one that they need to look out for and how to identify.
And how do you recommend producers tackle these weeds once they spot them in their fields?
Well, if they do not feel comfortable identifying them and scouting for them, they really need to get somebody out there that can keep an eye on it, because everything we talk about today is going to involve treatments before these plants get to be 4 inches tall. Once they reach past 4 inches tall, many of the herbicides we can throw at them today are not going to be effective enough to provide complete control. So again, it's a management aspect. Try and keep them coming out of the ground with some residual herbicides, and then treat them effectively post-emergence to get into the full crop canopy and protecting your yields.
And treating them when they're 4 inches or smaller can be a bit of a challenge because they grow so fast, right?
You're absolutely right. Water hemp, and especially Palmer pigweed, can grow 1 to 2 to 3 inches per day under ideal conditions. Certainly 7 days, if you have a sprayer breakdown or you get rained out with a couple of thunderstorm events, all of a sudden some of these weeds can be off-label and very tricky on whether it'll actually completely kill the weed or not. Then you'll have to come back in 7 to 10 days, check it all out, because you may need to retreat. And the last thing you want to do is have it regrow, take off, and make more seed, because you've just increased the chances of spreading that resistance or creating more resistance in that field right there from the get-go. So to stay on top of it is the number one thing we're trying to preach. Get your money up front so that maybe just a few weeds come out post-emergence instead of a whole bunch, you know, a whole train load of stuff coming out between the rows. Very difficult to treat that after you've smothered out with post-emergence.
And if the farmers who are gathered here today and listening to your presentation, if they only walk away with one piece of advice or information, what would you hope that that would be?
Stay on top of it. Stay on top of your management. Start learning these herbicides' modes of action and sites of action, or become quite familiar with someone that knows these certain skills, because identifying the weed and properly managing it is going to be the key, especially with the dollars now are very tight, so you need to know exactly where your herbicide dollars are going so you can protect that profit.
Again, that was University of Illinois Weed Science Research Specialist Douglas Maxwell. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.